Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Dr. Ed Vieira on the line. Ed has his degree actually in law. He graduated from Harvard Law School. But we're not going to be talking so much about law. We're going to be talking about economics. And there's nobody I know who understands the economic system, the Federal Reserve scam, and what is happening to our country economically better than Ed Vieira. He's been studying this for a long period of time. He's written a wonderful book that goes into the history of our Federal Reserve System, which is one of the greatest scams in the world, because the Federal Reserve System is no more federal than the Federal Express. It is simply a name they gave to confuse the American people, to delude members of Congress and the Senate. So back in 1913, they would pass legislation that would give power over our economic system to a privately owned central bank that for the better part of 90 years has used that power to benefit itself rather than the American people. Thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Montes. Glad to be here.
Why don't you go ahead and just sort of give a little, our listeners, just a little bit of your background. And I know that, of course, you practice law, you've had all sorts of fascinating cases, but certainly you've always been very interested in the monetary system, haven't you?
Well, I've been interested in the monetary system since the time I began studying economics. Actually, when I went to Harvard, I studied chemistry well before law. And I spent a lot of time wandering the stacks of Widener Library, which is the central library. They had a fascinating collection of economic texts. I never really studied much economics in terms of going to particular classes. It was more or less on my own, I think, which is what saved me. Because, of course, if one had studied at that time at Harvard or any of the major institutions, he would have received an education that was pretty much along the lines of Paul Samuelson and the Keynesians, rather than what I think is the thrust of the way I think, which is along the lines of free market economics and Austrian economics. But in any event, I became fascinated with the Federal Reserve System and with money because of its central position in our economic system. You can't have a market system, a system based on freely moving prices and exchange, without having some form of money. And what's fascinating is, of course, that kind of a system we have, the Federal Reserve, which is probably as far removed, I would say, from a free market system of money as one could get, not with, and especially given the nature of the constitutional principles that we have that's supposed to be controlling our monetary system. So the more I studied it, the more fascinated I became. And the one thing that fascinated me most is the extent to which people in this country don't know about it or don't seem to care about it.
Well, I fear that they're going to find out very, very soon, and whether it's this year or the next year or the year after that or the year after that, it really doesn't matter. The people who have believed the lie, of course, will be destroyed by the lie. And the people who are invested in pension funds or annuities or bank accounts or CDs or bonds are in for a very rude awakening, because the history of fiat money systems, which we have, has ultimately been a collapse. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Ed Vieira. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Ed Vieira. He, of course, is a doctorate in the law. He's a lawyer. But, of course, what he was studying at Harvard University many years ago, he was fascinated with economics. And in addition to being a lawyer, he has written extensively about our financial situation, about the foundation of our finances. And if you don't understand what's going on today, and if you don't begin making preparations, I believe most Americans are going to be totally devastated, and great wealth is going to be destroyed, and many people today who consider themselves multimillionaires are going to be impoverished, just exactly as has happened in Argentina here 3 or 4 years ago. It has happened throughout the world repeatedly. In fact, recently I read an article about Turkey, and somebody recently said the dollar can't fall, and nothing, it's got to stop falling. Well, that's what they said about the Turkish pound or whatever they have over there, and it did stop falling. When it lost, you know, 99.99% of its value, then it stopped falling. Well, why don't you pick up the story from there, Ed?
Well, let's go back a little further. Let's go back to Germany in the 1920s. Germans had all sorts of economic and social and political problems as a result of having lost the First World War. But their major problem from an economic point of view was a tremendous inflation that was generated by their central banking system. And their currency, the mark, lost, well, here's an example. An egg, early in 1923, cost a few thousand marks. By the end of 1923, it cost 80 trillion marks.
80 trillion.
Trillion.
Right.
Trillion, all right? Now, that monetary system continued to function while that tremendous depreciation was occurring. And huge fortunes were made on one side by people who knew how to play the market when depreciation was occurring, whereas the vast mass of the German people, especially the middle class, were essentially wiped out in terms of their savings, their financial position, employment, so forth and so on. It led directly to terrific economic stability and instability, and of course by 1933 they ended up with the Nazi Party and Hitler and everything that that meant. So we look at a situation like that, you say, oh, it can't happen here. If that's the kind of thing that happens in Turkey, that's the kind of thing that happens in Argentina. Actually, it happened twice in Argentina in the last, what, 15 years, last 20 years. They've gone through two huge crises. You look back at Germany in the 1920s, Germany was one of the most cultured countries in Europe. Science, philosophy, art, music, you run down the list of the elements of culture and social achievement, and Germany was high on any one of those. But it went down that path of fiat currency, government debt expenditure.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ed Vieira, who's written extensively on the monetary system. He's a Harvard-trained lawyer. He's one of the most exciting people I've met and talked to on these issues. And he's talking about what happened in Germany. And here you have a cultured society in Germany. You have a society with the arts and certainly with literature and the great philosophers. And remember that Germany was a strongly Christian country back in the 1920s and the early 1930s. In fact, is Christianity, both Catholic and Protestant, were the foundations of a very, very civilized society, and of course, remember how it ended up. So, pick up the story there.
Well, you go, you look at that, and some people would shrug their shoulders and say, "Ah, well, this is Germany that lost the First World War and it had all the problems that were the resulted from that loss." But only a few years later, 10 years later, to be exact, in 1933, there was a banking collapse here in the United States, spread throughout the world, was the beginning of the Great Depression. People were wiped out in this country in terms of their financial situation. We had rampant unemployment. The Roosevelt regime came in. Essentially, the first thing that Roosevelt did was take the country off any semblance of a gold standard. We only had a fractional reserve gold standard, but he took it off any semblance of a gold standard and brought in a tremendous increase in central government direction, control, and regulation, which has expanded ever since. So you can look at our present situation in this country in terms of the what I would call gargantuan expanse and expenditure of the national government and trace that directly back to the banking crisis of 1933. And of course, since World War II, this country has been very fortunate by our economic and political position in the world. You have to remember, we came out of World War II as essentially the only really stable financial country, a large country in the world. England had been devastated by the war. The empire broke up as a result of World War II. Of course, Germany had been destroyed. Japan had been destroyed. The Soviet Union was on the winning side, but a vast amount of its territory had been invaded and its industry destroyed, millions of people killed. I mean, the world was prostrate. The United States was the financial and economic center, and as a result of our position in the Bretton Woods Agreement, the Federal Reserve note, Federal Reserve currency, became a world reserve currency. So in a sense, the Federal Reserve became a kind of world central bank, because all the other major economic players were looking at our currency as the reserve currency. So for a very long time, we were in a position where the Federal Reserve was able to expand credit and currency, and we were able to export our inflation to the rest of the world because the rest of the world wanted our currency. Our currency was the most stable currency.
And, of course, it was backed, at least as far as other countries, by gold up until 1971, August 15th.
That's right. And comes that period of time, especially in the 1960s, really starts sort of the end of the 1950s, goes through the 1960s when President Johnson decided to fight the Vietnamese War according to the policy of guns and butter. So you had increased inflation coming out of the Federal Reserve. You're going to finance these tremendous welfare and warfare expenditures through bank manipulations, currency manipulations.
And you don't tax the people to pay for the war. You keep the taxes low enough, and you have suddenly a wonderful welfare state, something for everybody, a war on poverty, a war on cancer, a war on drugs, and we're going to provide health care for everybody, and then, of course, we're going to fight a war, and it's not going to cost you any money. That's a great scam.
Well, there's the delusion that was created or used by the Johnson administration. Somebody always pays. It's impossible to have such expenditures and no one pays. Now, you may not pay through taxes, but you pay through, in that particular instance, you pay through depreciation in the currency. And when currency depreciates, wealth is being transferred. This isn't something that happens that's costless and that nobody's hurt. It's directed, as it were. The banks are directing the flows of new currency to those people that they want to support. Those people are getting the full advantage, and as that currency depreciates in value, everyone else is taking the loss of that depreciation. So there's definitely a transfer of wealth, which operates just like a tax, except unlike a tax where it's essentially laid on the table what Congress is going to do, what is done through the Federal Reserve System is more or less surreptitious. Well, by 1971, the extent of Federal Reserve expansion, or the flip side of that, which is the extent of depreciation of the currency, was becoming so apparent, had become so apparent, especially in Europe. There had been tremendous gold outflows from the United States because during that period of time, the Treasury and the Federal Reserve would redeem for foreigners, not for Americans. Americans weren't allowed to have gold. But for foreigners, they would redeem Federal Reserve currency in gold. Well, foreigners became increasingly concerned about the stability of the Federal Reserve, and they started asking for more and more gold. Well, by 1971, the extent of that hemorrhaging out of gold was so great that President Nixon intervened, and as they say in the banking world, he closed the gold window. As he said, no more payments will be made, no more redemption will be made of Federal Reserve notes.
But I remember what he said. He said, this is only a temporary, we're going to close the gold window. But, well, that temporary gold window has been closed now for 34 years.
Well, that's right. Well, of course, you know, one wonders, you go back to Roosevelt. Roosevelt closed the gold window domestically. Americans could no longer redeem their Federal Reserve notes for gold, as had been the practice from 1913 to 1933. And, of course, that has never been reopened. Federal Reserve notes are not redeemable in gold. They're not redeemable in silver. The only thing that you can get for a Federal Reserve note is a Sacagawea-type coin, a coin made out of base metals, which is worth very little even on the metals market. And if you think about it, the real backing to the Federal Reserve note, the real thing that's there that you can require someone to do with that note is to pay your taxes. The Treasury is required, of course, to receive Federal Reserve notes in tax payments. And to me, that's the one legal requirement that actually has some substance to it. Because out in the marketplace, people from day to day can continue to raise their prices, need to depreciate. The only one who's really stuck with those notes, essentially, is the U.S. Treasury, required to take them. So here we have 1971. The United States goes off the gold standard internationally, and you have to think about what that means functionally. It means there's no limit any longer to how much inflation, that is, increase in the money supply, the Federal Reserve can put out. Because if it no longer has to redeem with gold, it doesn't have to worry about that drain of real assets. It can just put this money, this paper money, out at whatever rate it wants. It has no anchor. It has no limitations whatsoever. And since 1971, you look at any graph of expansion of the money supply, or you look at the inverse, the graph of depreciation in the value of the currency, and you'll see it has been a steady and actually an increasing rate since 71, especially in terms of the depreciation, shows it even better than expansion. Now we're in a situation where the Federal Reserve note, with all of this going on, is being challenged. It's being challenged, of course, by the euro in Europe. It's being challenged by the attitude of the Chinese, who I read the other day were talking about diversifying their holdings from Federal Reserve notes into some other currencies. It may be challenged by the Muslim world, where there's a movement now to move towards gold and silver and away from all Western paper currencies. Now, what that essentially means is that one of the big props under the purchasing power, under the value of the Federal Reserve note, its reserve currency status overseas, that is, the use that foreigners make of this currency in their own transactions, that big prop largely may be kicked out from under it. Well, when that prop is kicked out from under it, its real value is going to fall even faster than it's falling now. As soon as you take away from any currency one of its major uses, its purchasing power decreases rapidly. And they wouldn't even have to, literally the Federal Reserve system wouldn't have to generate one more Federal Reserve note for that depreciation to occur if foreigners start saying that they're not going to continue to use it at the same rate as their reserve currency.
Well, what we've really been able to do, Ed, we've been able to export our inflation. We've been able to live very, very well. We've been able to get other people to take our worthless money, and as long as everybody thinks it has value, why, it has value, and they trade it back and forth. But if the countries of the rest of the world suddenly begin to question the stability of our dollar, of our currency, and they are, because, of course, it's fallen tremendously in value over this last 4 years, and then they suddenly see that we have lost almost 50% of our factories, part of this globalization program supported by both of our political parties, and then they see us engaged in a war that they disagree with, and they realize that if they hold on to the American dollar, it continues losing its value, and they continue losing their wealth. One of these days, aren't they going to start getting rid of those dollars and refuse to buy any more of our bonds? Because we have to have over $2 billion a day invested in the United States just, of course, to keep on going. Either that, or, of course, the Federal Reserve has to create the money out of nothing, which would be highly inflationary.
Well, those are the two elements of what I would call a vicious circle here. Here you have all of this currency, this purchasing power overseas. And if foreigners begin to lose confidence that that currency will maintain even its present level of value, they have to get rid of it in some way. Right? They're certainly not going to burn it. They'll send it here. And we'll have a tremendous influx of this foreign currency, which, of course, will raise prices here astronomically. And the Federal Reserve, on the other hand, if it discovers that there's no other way to finance government, mounting government expenditures, and it increases the supply of Federal Reserve currency here, that will also increase prices. So we're looking at potentially, I won't say catastrophic, but they should be rather destabilizing levels of inflation.
Well, I think even Alan Greenspan has said that there are threats to the financial stability of our society, to the financial stability. I think that's a very nice word for saying we better look, watch out, or this whole thing can fall apart. We're going to be back in just a few moments with our special guest, Ed Vieira, talking about money.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 on the route down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. And this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Ed Vieira. You know, if you read the Bible, they used to talk about a jubilee year. Every 50 years ago, you forgave your debts and you started the economy all over again. And that was the way that it was planned. That's the way things used to happen thousands of years ago. But we've got some people in Washington, D.C. who think they're a lot smarter than anyone else, and they think they can keep building up a bubble, an economic bubble, entirely built upon debt indefinitely. And the problem is that one of these days, somebody's going to have to pay the piper. If we were an isolated country, we might be able to get by with this, but we're not isolated. We're part of the world, and we're totally dependent upon other countries lending us money to survive. We have become the greatest debtor nation in the world. Why don't you pick up the story there, Ed?
Well, let's go back a ways and understand what this concept of making currency out of debt is. Not something that was invented by the Federal Reserve or Franklin Roosevelt. it really goes back a long way into the private banking system. The ability of banks to generate their own currency based upon debt. Now, for a long time, that kind of a system existed in which the currency was backed, or the debt was paid, by gold or by silver. And you had redeemable paper currencies generated by banks. Redeemable meaning exactly that. You could take the paper currency to the bank and receive its face value in gold or silver coin. Even under that kind of a system, you had overexpansion by banks. They were generating more currency than they had gold or silver available to them. And that was allowed, in essence, by governments. Instead of the governments coming in as they should have and saying, wait a minute, if you go beyond a certain point in the generation of this kind of currency, you're actually engaged in a species of commercial fraud because you're telling the marketplace that there's really more gold and silver available on the basis of this currency that you put out than there is, the government sided with the banks and protected the banks against the consequences, both civilly and criminally, of the actions they were taking. And you had what used to be called the 19th century suspension of specie payments, which was a situation where in which the banks became overextended, they couldn't redeem their currency, and the government allowed them to stay in business as opposed to driving them into bankruptcy, even though they were not paying the holders of their notes, the gold and silver. Well, that relationship, that symbiotic or that incestuous relationship between the banks and the government in this country, ran into its nemesis in Andrew Jackson, who was a tremendous opponent of centralized private banking. And Jackson, in the 1830s, ended the relationship between the United States government and the private bank, so-called Bank of the United States. And that separation of bank and state, going all the way to separation of the Treasury from the banks, the Treasury no longer used banks under the Jacksonian system. They no longer use banks to hold United States funds, government funds. That separation of bank and state went along until the Civil War, until 1862. And in 1862 and 1863, the Union government, and the Confederate government did some of the same things too, but the Union government came along. It could not raise sufficient money by taxation, or it was afraid to raise sufficient money by taxation to pay for the war effort, because it was an unpopular war. And so the Union government turned to two elements that have become, as it were, the foundation stones of our present system. One was governmentally generated paper currency, the greenbacks of 1862. And these were originally not redeemable in gold because the government was not paying out any gold as a result of the war. Then secondly, they created a national banking system. And this was based upon government debt. A banker, a private banker, could get a charter from the national government and then would take government debt, turn that into the Treasury. Treasury would hold it. And 90% of the face value of that government debt, the banker could then loan out in currency, so-called national currency. So the banker was getting the interest on his bonds, which the Treasury was holding in trust, and he was getting the benefit of interest as a result of loaning out this new national currency. So there was the government becoming, as it were, a partner in the national banking system, or the banks becoming a partner in the floating of government debt. You can see the relationship there.
Well, I think it's really so interesting. You point out, of course, this whole thing developed because the war was unpopular. The people that had to pay for the war, they killed thousands of people in the draft riots in the North. They didn't want to fight in this stupid war. And this is what they did during Vietnam. They didn't charge us for the war. They did it all on debt. And that's what they're doing today over in Iraq. If the American people were having to pay the money for this war, there'd be a tremendous outcry, but it's not costing us anything. Boys are dying, but it's not costing us anything. Why should we be concerned? Or maybe we should be concerned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Would you like your school to reflect the same traditional family values as your home? Then VHM Christian School is just what you're looking for. A quality Christian education taught by credentialed, energetic, and loving teachers for ages preschool through 8th grade. We invite you to visit VHM on March 9th from 10 to 11 a.m. This is a special visitation day to acquaint everyone interested in our comprehensive program of faith integrated with learning. VHM is located in the Live Oak area of Santa Cruz and stands for Virgil Hosselt Memorial. But for over 50 years, it has become affectionately known as VHM to the surrounding community. Aside from the visitation day, you may also be interested in the Children's Health Expo on March 13th from 2 to 4 p.m. Speak with experts in the field of health, exercise, and diet with ideas to help you and your children. Call 475-4762 for more information. That's VHM at 475-4762. Being taught of God by the sea.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s,
well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We have Mike on the line, but I'm going to ask Mike if he wouldn't mind just hanging on for a little while. I want to, of course, Ed, to sort of develop this idea of what happened during the Civil War and the history of our monetary system, because if you don't understand how we got to where we are, you certainly don't know where we are today or where we're going to end up. So pick up the story there, please.
That's right. If people think that the Civil War is a little far back in American history, walk into your bank on Monday morning and see if it isn't, in fact, a national bank that isn't organized under the statute that was passed essentially originally 1863 and has been modified since. Well, the fact is that the national banking system under the Civil War didn't work terribly well. There were still bank panics. There were still monetary stringencies, as they used to call them, market collapses, a whole series of them into the 1900s. And the powers that be behind the scenes said, well, what we really need here to stabilize this system is what we call a lender of last resort. We need a central bank, an apex to this pyramid that we've created, that can generate liquidity, that is, new money out of nothing, in order to keep the system from having these crises, because the crises ultimately were based upon overexpansion of the banks. They put out too much paper currency in relationship to the real assets that they actually had available. So this system was created. It was called the Federal Reserve System. And as you point out at the beginning, it is not federal in the sense of being some part of the national government. It was created by congressional statute, but the 12 federal regional reserve banks are in fact private corporations. And as far as reserves were concerned, in the original statute, the banks were required to maintain a 40% reserve for the Federal Reserve note currency that they put out. And 40% in those days was considered to be a reasonable amount based upon banking practice. Well, it turned out not to be sufficient because Federal Reserve came into play in 1913, really to finance World War One. That was the ulterior motive for creating this thing, finance America's participation in the war. 1920 to 1921, system hadn't been in there for more than 7 years, and there was a collapse, a banking stringency, and a mini-depression. And then, of course, came 1929 through 1932, 1933, and you had a major collapse, a major banking implosion, if you will, and, of course, the Great Depression that lasted all the way through the 1940s, early 1940s, America came into the war. So here was a system that had been set up for the purpose of stabilizing the banking system, for the purpose of eliminating depressions, and the first chance that it had to eliminate them actually caused them and made them worse. And the response to this by the Roosevelt administration was not to come in with major reform and straighten the banks out. It was to take the government of the United States off, and the banks off the domestic gold standard so that the banks could expand even more. Roosevelt's policy was a policy of inflation. Now, as we said earlier, they maintained the gold reserve internationally because during the Depression, most major countries in the world were actually worse off than the United States. The United States was a major gold holder. In fact, a lot of gold came into this country because this country was perceived as being politically and economically more stable than most other countries in the world. So we developed a very large gold reserve here in the United States, but comes the 1950s, especially 1960s, again, the same policy as in the Civil War. President Johnson wanted to prosecute the war in Vietnam without raising taxes because, of course, it was rather an unpopular war. Had massive expansion of the banking system, tremendous gold outflows, and another major crisis that was dealt with by Nixon closing the gold window. Well, now we're in a position where there are no reserves. There's no backing. There's no limitation. There's no nothing, as they say, behind the Federal Reserve other than, if you will, the ability of someone like Mr. Greenspan as chairman to hold the reins a little tighter rather than a little looser. And as much as one can look at Mr. Greenspan and say, well, you know, he's a man of integrity and he's studied this subject, I don't think I really want to depend for my economic security and the economic security of the whole country in which I live upon the decisions of one man or five men or 12 men, these different committees that the Federal Reserve has. Yet that's what it has come down to. Instead of the market being in control, and essentially all Americans to a certain extent being in control through the market, we have a kind of oligarchical or dictatorial monetary regime in Washington that through mistake, or perhaps through some kind of purposeful action, some policy they want to put forward, could do tremendous damage overnight to our monetary position.
And we really almost have a policy based upon spending ourselves into prosperity, but of course not being worried at all where the money is going to come from.
Well, where the real wealth is going to come from. They know where the money is going to come from, Dr. Stanley.
Oh, they're going to create the money.
They're going to create this money. Right. But the question is not how much money I have. You know, people always think, oh, if I had more money, I'd be happier, I'd be wealthier. Wrong. If you had more wealth, you'd be wealthier. Money depends upon purchasing power. If you were in 1923 in Germany, you might have had a lot of money, but you wouldn't have had much purchasing power and real wealth. In the United States, if you have just been sitting since 1950, after the war, if you were simply sitting on $1 million in paper currency, your purchasing power, your real wealth, would have been going down and down and down, even though on paper you were a millionaire.
And I think this is what's so hard for people to realize, is that $1 million doesn't buy much today as it did 50 years ago. Not by
right.
a long shot.
And that's the result of a conscious policy of the Federal Reserve, the banking system, and the Treasury to increase the supply of currency for whatever reason, whether it's for war or for welfare expenditure, what have you, to increase the supply of currency without a commensurate increase in the productivity of the country. If you have more currency with the same amount of wealth or much more currency with a little bit more wealth, the purchasing power of that currency, the value of that currency, is going to go down. And they've been increasing the currency at an increasing rate, accelerating rate. The productivity of this country is not going up anywhere near that rate. Industry is going overseas. All of those problems connected with debt and the globalization, and the result has been and will be continued and accelerating depreciation in the value of currency, resulting in redistribution of wealth. You always have to remember that. Currency inflation is not, as the economists say, neutral. It has an effect on different people in different ways. Some people gain wealth, most people lose wealth. That's why they run the system.
And of
course, transfer wealth.
And of course, it is the people who are getting very wealthy who run the system. And I think recently the Bush administration said, we favor a strong dollar. And then they set out, of course, to weaken the dollar. How can you give mixed signals like this? Either want a strong dollar or a weak dollar. And they say, no, a weak dollar is going to be wonderful. Then our goods become much more competitive throughout the rest of the world. And then, of course, our productivity will start up again. Our factories will start working. If we can just get the dollar down low enough without ever pointing out to the people that when you do that, you destroy the value of their savings, their bonds, their annuities, everything that people have spent their whole life working for.
This country is not primarily an exporting country. Foreign trade is a small percentage of our total economic productivity. If the policy is to increase foreign trade, to make goods more competitive, I would think the intelligent way to do that is to reduce the prices of those particular goods, not reduce the value of the monetary unit. Because everyone else is going to be affected. People who have nothing to do with foreign trade will be affected by the monetary unit. Why should I see my wealth being eroded by this monetary policy so that a small group of people engaged in foreign trade can sell more goods and become wealthier? It simply doesn't make sense.
Well, there's so much going on today that just doesn't make sense. And I hope what your remarks are going to try to get some people out there thinking. Let's go to Mike, though. He's been hanging on very patiently. Yeah. Mike, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, it seems to me that in a very real sense, there is no U.S. currency. What we have is, as you've been saying, the Federal Reserve currency, and the Federal Reserve is a group of private corporations, and they're so good as to let us use their currency. Doesn't that seem like the picture?
Well, it is the picture. It absolutely is the picture. Now, if you look at the way the statutes have been set up, the banks are required to redeem that currency in what they call lawful money, what the statutes call lawful money, and ultimately that would be the U.S. currency that comes out of the Treasury, the base metallic
coin. There isn't any such thing anymore.
Oh, they put out, you can find Sacagawea coins and Susan B. Anthony coins and these, I'm talking base metal, all right?
Okay.
Base metal, not the silver and gold, and base metal. There's a statute that specifically says that they won't redeem currency in gold or silver. They stop that. So there is a tie, there is a connection. Also, the statute says clearly that Federal Reserve notes will be received by the Treasury for payment of taxes. So they have these two connections. Now, the first connection, the redemption in United States currency, goes all the way back to the original act, which had a gold redemption feature, which was one of the things that sold it, right? Told people originally, this currency is stable because it will be redeemed in gold. Well, then they took the gold away. The second one, the receipt by the Treasury in payment of taxes of Federal Reserve notes, is one of the things that helps the currency to circulate. I have to pay my taxes to the Treasury accepts Federal Reserve notes, therefore I have to go out into the marketplace and sell my services and goods for Federal Reserve notes in order to pay my taxes. It's a method for driving the circulation of the currency. If tomorrow morning the Treasury of the United States said, oh no, we're only going to accept silver and gold, you tell me what would happen to the circulation of Federal Reserve notes.
Mike, we got a real problem. Anything else you want to ask?
It's slipped away.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, okay.
Well, anyway, of course, as we see what's happening, then where are we going from here? Certainly, what would happen if the people wanted to change the reserve currency? What about the euro? Is the euro have the possibility of replacing the dollar as the reserve currency of the world?
Well, I suppose the answer is yes, given that the size of the European community's economy is pretty significant. But remember, that's another central bank fiat currency. It's not as if the euro were based upon gold or silver. It happens to be a currency that at the present time is somewhat more stable than the Federal Reserve note, probably because it hasn't been given a long enough period of time to destabilize. All right? you'll find history shows very clearly that there has never been a fiat currency, whether it was issued by a bank or by a government treasury, that has not, A, depreciated eventually at breakneck speed, and B, gone out of existence.
And I really think
history.
I think people really need to realize the same thing happened in ancient Greece, the same thing happened in ancient Rome. Why should we be surprised that it's happening here?
Well, it's the law of economics. Money plays a certain role in the market. And if you destroy the ability of money to play that role by injecting political policy into the system, money is a store of value and a measure of value. And to the extent that it's good in those two capacities, then it will serve as a medium of exchange. Well, if you're out there as a political policy, you're capable of destroying the purchasing power, destroying currency as a store of value, you will see the next step is that it loses its ability to be a measure of value, because if it's constantly changing in its value, it's not going to function very well as a measure. And then the third step is that it loses its ability to function as a medium of exchange. It goes out of existence as a currency and becomes a curiosity, if you will. And we are now going towards that third stage. First, internationally, where the Federal Reserve note, because of its loss of value and because it's no longer a good measure of value, people are questioning whether they want to use it as their medium of exchange internationally. Now, we'll continue to use it as our medium of exchange here domestically because it's tied into the federal government, it's tied into the tax system. But remember, in Germany, people were using that money in 1923 as an egg went from 80 marks to a couple thousand marks to 80 trillion marks. Right? It's not going to happen, how shall I put it this way? We're not going to see, I think, the American people wake up tomorrow, go to their congressman and say, we want a change in this system, and Congress will respond, and the system will be changed. We are going to see all of those steps that have occurred in other countries, other societies, other forms of fiat currency, that is, unbacked currency, paper currency, occurring here. And this international set of events that's been coming to the fore is the harbinger of the whole breakdown process.
Well, let's tell our listeners how to get onto your website and how to get copies of that wonderful book you wrote.
Well, the website is piecesofeight, PIECESOFEIGHT, run it all together, small letters, .us, piecesofeight.us. This is a two-volume book, hard cover, about 1,700 pages, which explains the history of the American monetary system from an economic and legal perspective from the beginning, from the colonial days, all the way through till the book was printed, which is about the year 2000, and then discusses some possibilities for reform, because I don't think there's anyone who wants to see this system collapse as the basis for change. Because out of the collapse, God knows what will happen. One only has to look at the events of the 1930s to see where, the 1920s, 1930s, to see where monetary collapses, even in very civilized societies, lead. So no one wants that. The question is, what could be done to try and forestall that kind of collapse, to try and, in some way, put a floor under this monetary system and bring about some reform, at least incrementally, that will minimize the kind of damage that we're going to have to suffer. And let's face the fact, you can't generate the level of unsupported debt that has been generated in this country without some damage occurring. There's no way we can walk away from this as a country with no loss, with no cost.
Well, of course, the thing is that there's no way we can stop this as long as we're spending more than we're taking in. We've got to cut spending, and neither the Democrats nor the Republicans want to cut spending. And even if they did, we've got the war in the Middle East. There's no way out of this. And it would appear we're even going to expand the war over there. It looks like we're on a one-way trip towards the destruction of the very structure of our society if we continue spending more than we take in indefinitely.
Well, that's been the history of this kind of a system, even from the days when inflation was accomplished by the crude method of diluting the silver and gold in coins back in the days of ancient Rome or in the Middle Ages. But there's that old saying, whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad. Right? You look at this system, and you see step after step after step being taken in the wrong direction, when everyone is looking over their shoulder at the monster of monetary collapse behind them.
And I really think if we listen very carefully to what Alan Greenspan is talking about, he's talking about threatening the stability of our financial system. I think those are frightening words if you contemplate what he's talking about.
And what they mean to the country.
Yeah, right. Thank you so very much for being with us. Again, that's piecesof8.us. And can people buy the book there?
Yes, they can. They'll find all the details they need.
God bless. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Bye-bye. Stan. Take care.
And, of course, I think we're not going to get your callers. Mike, call back after the program. We'll be glad to talk to you.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention the Christian education that is available at VHM School. And, of course, my son went there many years ago, I guess 25 years ago. The children who have been raised here at our home, the children of our secretary, they're going there at the present time. They're getting a wonderful education. They're getting a Christian-based education. They're learning things that most of our children in the public schools are not learning. They're learning discipline. They're learning love of God and love of family and love of country. And if I can recommend the PHM school to you, if you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But parents are given the responsibility for raising their children, and believe me, you put them into the government school, they're going to get the education the government wants them to have, and they're going to be turned against God, family, and country, because that's the purpose of education, to destroy our children's faith in God. Give us a call if you'd like to know more. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there and listening to us, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, we'd be glad to send it to you free of charge. Now, my September and my October newsletter of last year, 2004, dealt with finances. We'd be glad to send you either one of those letters if you call us at 1-800-544-8927 or go up on our website at radioliberty.com and pull them down. You need to have an understanding of what Dr. Vieira was talking about to understand what you have to do today to begin to protect yourself from the coming financial storm. Because I think, as someone said, we're moving into a perfect financial storm. And those of you who saw the movie, The Perfect Storm, well, I believe we're heading exactly the same way financially. Everything is in place. It's only a matter not of if, but when. So if you'd like to get the information, we have a number of books going into finances. We have, of course, The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin that gives you the background and understanding of the Federal Reserve System. We have The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. We have a book on gold written by Professor Sutton. We have a book called Fiat Money Inflation in France, which is written actually by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the president of Cornell University 100 or more years ago. But the book he wrote at that time is as apropos today as it was when he wrote it, because it tells you what happened when the French government tried to do exactly what we're doing today following the French Revolution and, of course, the disastrous consequences. The system is not beginning to work. More and more people throughout the world are beginning to turn against the American dollar. It's decreasing in value. And just because it keeps falling doesn't mean we're going to get a stronger economy. Don't believe what these people are telling you. They're telling you a lot of things that aren't true, because the one thing they fear is the American people are going to find the truth. If you'd like to, of course, get the books we talked about, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Gold, The book The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, or Fiat Money Inflation in France, or a wonderful video we have called Phenomenon, The Money Men. Why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you're interested in understanding international finance, you need to really read my book. We don't have a lot there, but we tell you the very essentials of what this is really all about and how the central bankers work in concert throughout the world. And we tell you, not what I say, but what Professor Quigley said. He was Bill Clinton's mentor. He explained to Bill Clinton how the world really works. And we quote him in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can get the book, the video, or the audio tape. Now, you can get a case of those books, and probably this will be the last time, either today or Monday, that we'll be making this offer. You can get a case of our books, 62 copies of the book, which ordinarily sells for $12.95. You'll be able to get them for $124 plus shipping. Why? Well, because we're doing a major shipping, and it'll be a lot easier for you to for us to print a lot of books, and we get the price on down. And so if you'd like to get a case of our books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, but you have to take the whole case, and you have to pay for the shipping. But then, of course, you can give them away, you can sell them, but mainly I want you, of course, to get them in people's hands, get them to read, and understand the behind everything going on today. There are powerful spiritual forces that are manipulating and directing everything that's going on. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our website, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. So until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. May the Lord be with you.